I want you to fuck lots of beautiful guys. No apologies, no regrets.
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast. Each week we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show to find out if it still holds up 17 years later. Hi, I'm Patrick Randall. This episode is called The Wedding. It's number 11 in season 2 of Queer as Folk.
I'm Matt Dominguez. And this episode first aired in the U.S. on March 31st, 2002.
It was directed by Kevin Inch. He directed 8 episodes of the show, and this is his third. He previously directed Pride, which I ended up liking after dreading that episode. And he also directed Ted's Not Dead way back into season 1 of the show. We liked that episode too, even though Ted was only in a coma for 42 minutes of screen time.
It's all about being efficient. The Wedding was written by showrunners Ron Cohen and Daniel Lipman, and the teleplay was written by Karen Walton. She wrote 3 episodes, and this is her second. Her first was Hypocrisy, Don't Do It. We had some problems with that episode, so let's see what we thought of Karen with this time around.
As soon as I saw Karen Walton appear in the credits, I was like, oh no.
And I think we came to a similar conclusion.
We're going to do something different and not compare the official Showtime synopsis with the IMDb one. Instead, we're going to read a more thorough description of the episode from thetvdb.com. It's sort of a Wikipedia of TV shows. So here we go.
It's days before Lindsay and Melanie's wedding. At a pre-wedding celebration, their friend Lita offers them a tarot card reading from mysterious Marilyn. Marilyn warns them that they cannot get married on their wedding day because astrological reasons will cause certain disasters to occur.
Unwilling to listen to Marilyn, Lindsay and Melanie continue with their wedding plans. However, everything goes wrong. Wedding cake is delayed. Lindsay's dress is ruined by the dry cleaners. The wedding rings are missing, and the hall that they had rented has shut down for salmonella poisoning.
Because Mercury was in fucking retrograde.
That's true.
Lindsay also has a few panic attacks and later concludes that these disasters were happening because the world was trying to tell them that they should not get married because they are gay.
Brian, who won a free trip to the white party in Miami, decided he would rather skip the wedding and go get laid. I'm okay with that. But when things go wrong for the two brides, he gathers up everyone to save the wedding.
Even by the synopsis, I'm annoyed by this episode.
This episode had one storyline. The A story was Melanie and Lindsay. So makes our job easier. Normally, we break these down into the A story, the B story, and any runners. So not surprisingly, our A story is Melanie and Lindsay. And this was one hell of a train wreck of an episode.
Let's just start from the top, shall we?
What the fuck was that dyke party about?
That was an intense bachelorette party.
Is that what it was? Wasn't it just a night out with the girls?
Well, no. What Lindsay, I believe, called it a stagette. So I guess it was a stag party, but with lesbians. And I mean, like they went beyond dildos, shots,
dick sucking. Well, fake dick sucking.
They were sucking the dildos. At what point does it count as pornography if it's just the dildo they're sucking?
I didn't know that lesbians did that. I didn't know that they strapped on a big dildo and took their top off and danced and poured a shot over it and had other people lick the shot off of the penis.
I thought that was a guy.
No, those are all girls. They all had strap-ons.
I understand that. I'm talking about like the person who dropped the alcohol on the dildo and sucked on it. I thought that was a dude. Because that's the only way I could justify them sucking a phallic device.
We clearly didn't understand this scene. Did you see the part where the one woman had that electrode lightning machine and she was dragging it across that other girl's tits?
Yes.
What the fuck was that?
Electrostimulation is something that someone can get into.
That's what it is. It's this big glass globe that shoots lightning out of it.
I guess maybe for 2002, that's what people used.
Wow.
But yeah, it was an intense, intense party. I was part of a wedding party last year and, you know, our bachelor party was going to medieval times. So, you know, tomato, tomato,
no
I guess.
Stem there?
No, I mean, you know, some of the nights were pretty attractive, but
I think they're all attractive. All those long flowing hair and
yeah.
They're on horses. Men on horses. Wow.
Okay. we found something that we stumbled onto something that Patrick really
Fabio
likes.
Used to ride a horse, right?
So at this at the stagette party, which of course was organized by Leda. I mean, I love that she's such the female embodiment of Brian, but Lindsay and Melanie aren't annoyed by it by any means. They find it charming and fun, but they'll always hold something like, I feel like if this was a party that Brian had
created, why isn't Brian there?
Right? Totally. That would have such been his scene.
I did like that mysterious Marilyn was back. She was in the episode Queens of the Road in season one. That was the one where Justin ran away to New York City and everybody had to pile into the Jeep and hit the road and rush to New York City to rescue Justin.
Well, they wanted to make sure they got a nice montage in. So right. Here, all the quick shots of the busy streets of New York.
Mysterious Marilyn lets us know that Mercury is in retrograde. And then she immediately curses the wedding.
When is the special day?
This Saturday.
Uh-oh.
What?
I'm sorry, girls, but you can't possibly get married this Saturday. Didn't you know? Mercury is in retrograde, a time of extreme imbalance in the universe. Upheaval, miscommunication, and misunderstandings resulting in serious discord for everyone.
Well, she doesn't put a curse on it. She's saying that the wedding will be cursed if they get married on that Sunday.
That's just mean. Why would you say that to somebody?
Well, I think she was just trying to warn them in her mind.
She was doing her job.
Yes. She was trying to help them. I don't really trust Mysterious Marilyn because it didn't even seem like she understood how tarot cards actually work. Apparently, you can tell by tarot cards whether or not someone is going to do some redecorating and even down to the color. Again,
one time I touched somebody's tarot cards and they threw sage in my face. And
that was bad juju, Patrick.
Is that what sage does?
Yes, that's what people burn sage to rid the bad spirits. That's why
the bad spirit.
That's why in a lot of theater companies in Chicago, after stuff comes out about them and tied to the Me Too movement, people tend to want to cleanse the theater by burning sage.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a real thing.
It would have fit right in with this wedding because this wedding was doomed. I did like, though, that the Mysterious Marilyn character was a nice callback to an episode a long time ago. So somebody had some good memory about that character. I remember being amused by Mysterious Marilyn back in season one, even though she had like such a small part. I kind of wish that she would have appeared more often.
Yeah, I guess this is the last time we see Mysterious Marilyn. She doesn't come back after this.
Yep, she's done.
Which is a shame.
Did you see Ted's shirt when they were in Woody's at the beginning of the episode?
I did not. What was his shirt?
It was, I guess, what you would call a gas station shirt, like that the gas station attendant would wear.
It was like a mechanic kind of like shirt?
Yeah. And it had patches on it. I don't know why he would wear something like this, but this was my first tip off that there was something wrong about this episode.
Was that too fashion forward for Ted? Is that what?
Well, at the time they were kind of, yeah, fashion forward. Mm-hmm. But Ted would never wear something like that. He never had any like real fashion sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's usually a tucked in polo shirt.
Yeah.
Bad fitting khakis. But that seems to be the MO for a lot of characters in the show for the early 2000s.
Something else I tripped up on was Melanie was on the phone with the caterer and then she, quote, demands to speak to somebody with English as a first language.
Many days ago. Look, is there somebody there who speaks English as a first language?
Two things. I don't think he'd really say that anymore. Second, what happened to Melanie speaking all access powers in season one? She spoke Japanese.
You're going to tell me she doesn't know French?
Is that what the person was speaking?
Oh, I had assumed. I was basing that off of the experience they had when they were doing the food tasting.
Oh, you thought it was that?
I thought that was the same. Yeah, I thought that was the same people. That's why I was like, why would she have such difficulty with this? Isn't she fluent?
Yeah, this is something that I think queer folk often really suffers from, is just not having a great memory about their own characters.
I find that to be a symptom of a lot of early television. I even noticed that in something like The Golden Girls, continuity means jack shit to people. Like, I kid you not, I'll never forget this. There's a scene that happens later in the series of The Golden Girls where they change Blanche's middle name just to make a joke. Because when she's visited by her nanny in like season two, she is Blanche Marie Hollingsworth. And then in the later season, she's called Blanche Elizabeth Devereaux. So they could spell out her initials to spell bed. And I'm like,
what? Wow.
We know the truth though.
Yeah.
Writers, I think, didn't really care so much about maintaining that kind of continuity.
I wonder if they changed script supervisors in this episode, because this was such an outlier in the Queer as Folk universe.
It was so outlandish. I will say the one thing that I did enjoy was that as Mel is on the phone, she's freaking out, and she's, did you see what Gus had on his bib?
Oh, spit happens, I think.
Spit happens. I'm like, oh, okay. I kind of enjoyed that. I thought that was kind of funny.
This was like one of those like Star Trek alternate universe episodes where it's all the same characters, but they're all different.
They absolutely did not seem like the same people that we have known like the past 30 episodes. It was very strange.
Like Lindsay all of a sudden suffers from panic attacks. The worst panic attack in the history of television. Oh, that was so bad.
I half expected to hear like the Benny Hill music over this episode. It was so ridiculous just how wacky and crazy it got.
There was a cute little shot of Brian in little white trunks with a nice package while he's trying on his Miami Vice whites and pastels because he was going to go to Miami.
Oh, yes. Going through all the different themed parties
for
this white party.
It's like, oh, we haven't seen Brian in his underwear from the front in a very long time.
Yeah, he's usually just naked. I'm surprised he owns underwear.
Of course, he has to be the one to throw a wrench into the wedding. So he breaks the news to them that he's just not going to go, which immediately snapped Lindsay out of that panic attack.
Right. Well, it was so funny because he makes a comment about them doing freaky lesbo sex in front of the kids or in front of Gus.
You know, I thought we agreed no weird lesbo sex in front of the kid.
Fuck off, Brian.
Fine. I just dropped by to let you know I'm not going to be at the wedding. I'm going to the white party in Miami instead. Later.
You can't ditch my special day.
Selfish prick.
Melanie calls Brian a selfish prick. And I thought that was just such a strange comment. Because, first of all, how does not going to somebody else's wedding make them selfish? Are you obligated to go to a wedding?
I guess in their minds, because he's so close and Gus's father, they have justified that, of course, he would be at the wedding. I do like his reasoning for not going, though.
Well, I don't know is that anybody should ever be required to go to a wedding.
Why would Melanie call Brian a selfish prick for not going to the wedding? I would think she'd be like, great, bye.
Well, that's what they did at the end of the scene.
So, well, after he had to explain why it was a good idea for him not to go, I would have thought from the onset, Melanie would be like, oh, you don't want to go? Fine by me. Have a great trip. Get the hell out.
Have you ever not gone to an event that you were supposed to go to or that you were expected by somebody to go to and then they ended up very upset?
I won't say that anyone I've ever experienced anyone getting upset like that.
Yeah, so it's like, you selfish prick. Why? I don't get it. If you don't want to go, fuck off. Who cares? It's one right? less surf That's and a, turf.
I mean, unless they're angry that they paid for the plate, which then in that case, I would get it.
But then they let him off the hook.
Have a safe trip.
Which I thought was kind of dumb. You know, you can't get like that riled up. You can't snap out of your panic attack. You can't say, fuck off, Brian, and then be like, okay, great. Glad you're not coming.
He did give all of the things he was going to do in order to get through the wedding.
I'll be drunk. I'll be bored, not to mention better looking than the brides. I'll offend all the dykes. I'll heckle the ceremony, table dance at the reception, and inevitably fuck every good looking guy, gay, straight, or undecided in the place. Finally, I'll pass out naked, bitching about the cheap booze. You'll lose your dignity, your friends, and your shirts paying for the damages. Hell, doing you a favor getting out of town.
Well, Debbie was like completely pissed that Justin didn't want to go to the wedding either. And then we find out that Justin was going to be the ring bearer. It's like, what the fuck?
I was a ring bearer too. I was also half of Justin's age when I was a ring bearer.
Yeah, but what? Why Justin?
I have no idea.
In the end, they didn't have a ring bearer and Justin was there.
He was sort of the ring bearer. I mean, he at least brought the rings up.
Did he?
Yeah.
I thought they pulled him out of their pocket.
No,
I don't remember
he
that.
He went up to like give them the rings. But
good job, Justin.
good for you. Because I just remember him looking so proud that he did it. And I was like, yeah, you handed the rings to them. I don't know what else you want from this, Justin.
Well, Lindsay and Brian, when Lindsay was getting ready for the wedding, and she's talking to Brian, and she lets him off the hook and tells him to go fuck lots of guys in Miami because it's the best gift that he could ever give her.
I want you to fuck lots of beautiful guys. No apologies. No regrets. It's the best gift you could give me, knowing you're happy.
Really?
I don't have any answers.
God, the story was just all over the place.
I'm so unbelievably frustrated by this episode because there's no logic to how the storyline progresses.
Yeah, it was like a big absurdist comedy.
Yes, everything was hot and cold. There was no lukewarm. There was no buildup to it. It's just, you're awful. Oh, you're forgiven.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, this was a pretty terrible episode. I struggled to get through it, and then I had to watch it again.
Exactly. And, you know, I told you this before we started recording, that the first time I watched the episode, I just watched it. I just sat, didn't think anything much of it. But then when I went back to rewatch it to kind of gather my thoughts, I think I was about 15 minutes in before I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, there's a moment where the dress was trashed by the dry cleaner. Was that supposed to be Granny Faye's dress that they boosted from her parents' house before?
I would have thought.
The significance of this dress? Chekhov's gun. They introduced a dress an episode ago. They didn't use that dress.
Instead,
say yes to the dress.
Yeah, and of course, and I love the fact that Leda said, like, well, they gave you $100 worth of coupons. I was like, no, if that was some sort of family heirloom, yeah, you'd be suing their ass for fucking up your dress. Come on.
That's right. One funny thing in this episode was that super creepy shot of Brian in the tanning bed. This scene was very bizarre because Mel and Lindsay have their little spat. Melanie ends up going to Brian for help because Lindsay had called off the wedding. Why is she going to Brian? Why is that her first call?
I don't have words. I can't try. Usually when we have these conversations about these episodes and you have questions about motivation for the characters or trying to dissect the decisions they make, I usually can try and justify it or find a way in what the writers were doing. Here, it was like they gave no fucks. And they're like, we got to put together an episode that's 45 minutes long. That's the wedding. It felt like it had to be like the episode of the season because the lesbians are getting married. We have to have like the event of season two. They gave literal no fucks to how the story was meant to progress. Because yeah, why would Melanie go to Brian, who has already told them, I'm not going to the wedding. Bye.
Who, by the way, is laying in a tanning bed naked with glowing green tanning glasses on with blue light. He ended up looking like this very bizarre, I don't know what, but there's like space music and sci-fi lines from Brian. And how did Melanie find him there anyway? How did she know where he was?
He also doesn't seem to trim.
No. Very unkempt.
I was rather surprised by that.
I backed it up.
I was like, wait a minute. Is that what I think it is? That is. You didn't want to, you know, clean that up a little?
Clean that up. You're on camera. And Lindsay that just thinks that all these things are happening because the world is out to get her and Mercury's in retrograde.
Mysterious Marilyn was right.
Oh, not that Mercury in retrograde shit again.
Our wedding's been methodically and systematically deconstructed. If you ask me, somebody up there doesn't think we should get married. And maybe there's a reason. Maybe that's because people like us aren't supposed to get married.
Like us?
Do you need the roof to cave in?
The story just did not make any sense at all.
No, it went into this clusterfuck of wackiness and wasn't grounded in anything real the entire episode.
It's kind of funny because this episode was just so disjointed and all over the place. I'm looking at my show notes. I've got four pages of show notes here. And most of them are in the wrong order. Now, the episode just right, confused me that much.
Trying to follow it is just so painful.
So painful that we're going to take a break, have a glass of wine, and we'll be right back.
And while we're waiting for those poppers to kick in, make sure you go rate us on iTunes.
On demand and on the go, no downloading, no syncing, no wasted money. Stitcher, stream your favorite podcasts. Don't have Stitcher? Download it today for free at Stitcher.com or in the App Store.
Well, thanks to Emmett's pioneering efforts on Ted's website, he is able to now purchase something he's always wanted, a brand new ass.
You know, Emmett already has a great ass. And the costuming here, did you notice the costuming? Mm. The costumer cut the legs of his pants so that it looked very flat.
We have known him to be someone who never skips a leg day at the gym. All through the first season.
Oh, yeah. I used to remark on all of his exercises were all like
all
glutes.
About the ass.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly perky and firm. But you're going to tell me that his ass isn't great now? And he, like he's all this right. time he's been saving up to make sure he can get a new ass?
That was one of those things I talked about before that seems to show up in the show so often, which is an implausible possibility not being as good as a plausible possibility. This was just an implausible possibility that Emmett suddenly has a flat ass and wants to have it fixed. It just didn't work. I don't know why it was there. I don't know why this story, I don't know where this came from. Karen Walton, please tweet us and tell us what you were thinking.
Tweet us at StillQueerAF and let's try let's and break chat. Down. Yeah. Hit us in our DMs and let's see if we can set something up.
We'll fly you out and we'll record an interview with you. That creepy plastic surgeon.
Oh, though. Dr. Beamer. There's so many things. He does go to this plastic surgeon who hands him the catalog, and the catalog is like a terrible, looks like it was put together in like an Microsoft Paint.
Yeah.
You know, airbrushing of all these different kinds of asses he could buy.
I did think that Peter Page carried this scene really well, though.
There was something about Peter's performance here where it made it seem like he was uncomfortable in the situation. And I'm like, I relate to this right now, Peter. Thank you. And so Dr. Beamer then offers for Emmett to see his work in person. And a trio of gentlemen come in wearing ill-fitting khakis. I'm sorry.
And polos.
If you had gotten this work done that is specifically meant to show off a great ass, why would you not wear pants that show off that ass? I mean, yeah.
Maybe
call
that was
me
the
crazy.
Fashion of 2002 where you wore pleated khakis.
Never again. And they all drop trowel. And we're supposed to assume that this is the great work of Dr. Beamer.
That was not great work.
They were terrible asses.
No, well, okay. I'm not going to say like they're the worst I've seen. I definitely would play with them. I don't think that they were something that I would purchase.
They were so flat, you could have bought them at IHOP.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, you just get them in the right position, maybe face down.
They were all beveling to try and give them some rounded shape. Wasn't working. And I also was incredibly creeped out by the one line that Dr. Beamer had, because like he says something about how he's...
Let's listen to it real quick.
I did them all myself. I also did their asses.
So are we led to believe that he fucked them?
That's what he's making it sound like. And I kind of want to be like, excuse me, gentlemen. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and those are like his employees too, so... I think there's something to be said for him doing that with them.
Creepy. And meanwhile, Emmett is, you know, he's testing the merchandise. He's giving them a pinch. He's giving them a shape. He's giving them a smack. I'm like, really? These are the pride and joys that he's willing to show off to convince Emmett to get not just a great ass, but a custom package? He also mentions that he can show Emmett what his ass would look like through a digital simulator. I'm like, then why did you need them? Yeah. It didn't make any sense.
I still can't figure out why Melanie turned to Brian to fix this. That really stuck with me. Ordinarily, she wouldn't even pick him up if he was like broken down alongside the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
I mean, we've seen it established that she's able to go to someone like Ted for things. Why didn't she go to Ted?
Yeah.
Why didn't she go to Debbie? Why? I think Brian would be like sixth or seventh on this list that she would go to.
Why didn't she solve it herself, like the strong woman that she is?
I mean, she was a whimpering mess when she went to Brian, so maybe she was just as spent, but not having full-on panic attacks the way Lindsay was.
There's a big flaw in the dialogue. There's two of them where Brian says,
"Yo, bitches, tear each other's hair out later."
Where did that come from? Brian doesn't talk like that. He doesn't say bitches, or he doesn't say yo bitches.
And that's when he's talking about Ted and Michael, about their gift or whatever.
Yeah. It's like, what is Karen Walton doing to these characters? She's like rewriting them into absurdist comedic follies.
I feel like Cowan and Lippman said, here's the outline. We're going to go take lunch. We'll see you later. And then next thing you know,
went to the white party in Palm Springs. They came back and this episode was done and they said, well, it's already been shot. So
I guess
Ted also had an uncharacteristic line where he called Brian by his last name.
Now hold it, Kenny. What are you doing?
Ted doesn't do that.
Ted doesn't have we know he obviously has the dick. I don't know if he has the balls to say something like that to Brian.
Yeah. So somebody lost the show Bible for these characters, or somebody just decided to recreate them. Karen Walton.
We're naming names.
Yeah. So this wedding's falling apart. They have no hall, no rings, no dress, no food, because the hall was poisoned with salmonella. I know. George Schickel to the rescue. He has a ballroom.
So we know that Emmett has called every event, banquet hall event place from A to Z, because he ends the last one we
Zanzibar.
See
is
with Zanzibar, in which they laugh him off the phone, rightfully so. Hey, George, you knew this was an option from the beginning.
That's a very good point.
Why didn't you say, hey, before you do all that,
I have a
suggestion. I'm sorry, if I were Emmett, I'd be like, George, you couldn't have taken the lead on this?
He may be pre-dementia.
Oh.
Maybe he forgot he had the ballroom.
Sometimes he may forget who Emmett is. And
Fetch
Dixon.
Debbie was lecturing Justin.
You want to grow up be another Brian Kenny. Always running away from love, never towards it. Then you go to Miami and you fuck your little Twinkie brains out. But it's never going to make you happy.
That line from Debbie did not resonate with me at all. Because I don't think that Brian has ever really wanted love or a boyfriend. He was always happy just sucking and fucking his way through life. And Justin was a surprise for him. He just kind of came out of the woodwork. He's been embracing it pretty well. But Debbie just drops this bombshell line about Brian's always running away from love instead of towards it. I'm like, what? Why?
What love has he ever wanted? Has he ever experienced to even be able to run away from it? I don't get that.
Well, Brian all but kidnaps Melanie and Lindsay, breaks in on them in their bedroom, throws them in the Jeep, and then drives out to the Schickels' house. So if I can connect these dots here, Brian rallied the entire gang to get the wedding together overnight, but then let the brides stew about it until morning when he showed up at their house to pick them up. What if they would have made arrangements on their own? Or
what if they eloped? What if they weren't even home?
Justice of the peace.
I mean, that to me would have been the simplest solution. Like, let's just go to the courthouse, let's get the civil union, and we're out.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of like this little story of Michael and Ted trying to buy a wedding gift, though. And I think I only liked it because I was looking for something to like in this episode.
I'm still searching.
But is this really something that friends fight about, or it was just more farce?
It was so outlandish that I couldn't believe it, because also it made Michael to be even more of an idiot than he really is. He really thinks there's an African country named Chuck.
With a Rastafarian hanging out in an alley off Liberty Avenue.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, I liked that there was at least some fighting between the two of them, but it just carried on for way too long. Grown adults should be able to resolve that pretty quickly, but they just carried this dumb story a little too far. Was the story here, though? Why did Karen Walton pit Ted and Michael against each other?
I don't have words for this.
This never comes back in the future. We never hear anything about this.
Because I also want to continue to talk about this street vendor in which Michael bought –
this gift.
Isn't she beautiful? Her name is Hazarai, goddess of love and pride.
How much is she?
$600.
I only have five.
That would be $600 Chuck dollars, 500 American.
What? Michael.
Chuck, next to Chad.
Michael. Come on. I would have thought by dating Ben, there would have been something that could have been unlocked. A modicum of intelligence to think about this. Did you really think this?
I did like how everybody kept thinking that Chuck and Chad were two gay guys instead of the countries.
I mean,
I was looking for a laugh in the episode, and this was all I got.
Well, good for you.
Where was Gus in this wedding?
I think still just chilling and his spit happens.
Well, when Mel and Lindsay were doing hair and makeup, like all of a sudden Debbie does hair and makeup. Okay. She's a waitress and she does hair and makeup on the side. Melanie leaves the room to go call the sitter. What kind of a lesbian couple with a two-year-old is going to get married and not have the two-year-old at the wedding?
Why wasn't Gus the ring bearer?
Exactly. Dogs have been ring bearers before. They strap the ring to the back of the dog and the dog prances down the aisle.
They literally could have done the same thing to Gus. Yeah.
And who are all those strangers at the wedding?
I don't know. All of a sudden they have friends.
Well, there's like 60 people there. And we knew perhaps six, the main cast.
that's it.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Why were they there? Why didn't they have any lines? And this was just such a weak TV wedding. This is supposed to be like an event, a TV event.
Nope.
I did like their vows. Their vows were kind of nicely written.
Honey, I wasn't sure we'd make it here today. But thanks to our friends, or I should say, our family, not even the stars or the planets could keep us from exchanging our vows. I love you, Lindsay Peterson. I will fight for you. I will protect you. You are my beshert.
What does Melanie call Lindsay?
It was a Yiddish word.
It was a Yiddish.
I didn't know what that was.
I literally had no idea either. Yeah, I was like, I know she's going full Jew with this right now, but...
They were in a chuppah.
They were. They were in a chuppah. So I did like that it was a sort of...
I didn't smash the glasses, though.
Yeah.
We're so confused
by
this wedding.
They're missing some things, because, again, the wedding I was in was more traditionally Jewish wedding, too. So they were under the chuppah, and they broke the glass.
I saw a picture of you wearing a yarmulke.
Yes.
At a wedding.
Yes.
I remember that.
I still have it, obviously.
Melanie... With so much love and support around us, I really do believe that there is no obstacle, no problem we can't overcome. Together, in friendship and in love, our hearts will be eternally united. I love you, Melanie Marcus.
I really thought that brunch that they had with the harpist was more put together than their own wedding. Remember the Love Shack brunch? They had a harpist. There was no musicians at this wedding.
No. Come on. Well, didn't George Sickle offer to get the Philadelphia or the Pittsburgh Symphony?
Philharmonic.
Yes, that's what it is. The Pittsburgh Philharmonic. But Emmett wanted to do this on his own terms. But he'll still take your ballroom.
Yeah, and he used his tush fund to pay for whatever he was paying for. That must have been quite a tush fund. I just didn't like that there was so much farce around their wedding. Because for as much ragging on the lesbians that we do... They deserved a better wedding. This wedding was just a farce.
I thought last week's episode where they were fighting over the planning of the wedding was a hell of a lot more interesting and gave them a clearer reason why they should get married with the whole Granny Faye storyline. I thought that was so much more interesting. And I felt like all of the setup from that episode into this was thrown away.
This should have been a huge event for the show. Because remember, in 2002, gays and lesbians could not get married. Same-sex marriage did
not
exist.
That's right.
So this should have been a seminal moment for TV where a same-sex couple gets married in a very beautiful wedding. This was just farce and slapstick and comedy. It didn't really do justice to two characters that in the show have always struggled to have good stories and good lines. It was just second-class treatment for a very important matter. I didn't like that.
Yeah. at this time, this could have been, as you said, this could have been an opportunity for the show to represent something in the community that shows that, I don't want to say gays are just like straights, but that there are couples who still want to have the same things. So having the wedding of their dreams, that was possible. And I feel like
it just turned it into a joke.
Yeah, it was just all done for yucks and really sort of demeans the point of why they were having a wedding in the first place.
Exactly.
You know, as we saw in the last episode, they got married because they knew Granny Faye and the love that she had couldn't be.
Yeah, that was such a deep and meaningful story.
And like very moving and offered such great motivation. And here, all of that buildup and all of that work was just tossed aside so we can get some laughs and it could go full sitcom with it. But even in sitcom, they still have something based in truth and reality. Here, I didn't believe anything for a second.
Yeah, it was the alternate universe episode where everybody was just slightly off.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't stand it. So this episode was a total flop, complete outlier in the show. It reminded me of season one a little bit, where the stories were just all over the place and only loosely connected, in that the same names on the character and they look the same, but all of a sudden they're just acting radically different.
And you just don't understand why. In the first season, I give it a pass because it was in the first season, I always think a show is trying to find its footing.
Sure.
And I think shows, really successful shows, tend to do better as they go into the second, third, and fourth, because they understand who they're writing for, how they're presenting the characters. They've given them enough background to really create them into the more complex realm. I mean, that's why some of the greatest sitcoms come into play in their second and third seasons. I mean, one of the best sitcoms I think ever created for television, Seinfeld, was that exact situation. That first season of it was kind of, but then that second season has an episode called The Chinese Restaurant, and it changed the series.
Yeah.
And from then on, it just went up. Here, it's just they went fuck all with it.
So there's last week I talked about how we're dangerously close to the show Jumping the Shark. And this was the start of that. Episodes that we have coming up don't get much better. And then there's a little bit of a smile curve where all of a sudden the show gets much better. So like next week is an episode called 1 Degree of Brian Kinney. That's mostly focusing on Debbie becoming a gumshoe and tracking down the killer of Dumpster Boy.
And oh, then after right. That one, that's right. We had a murder.
After that one, we find out that Michael's father is really a drag queen.
Yes.
And that's about where the shark jump sort of lands. So these are kind of a series of very implausible episodes that I don't think did the overall story much benefit. I think it just kind of derailed it for half of the season. So enough foreshadowing. Let's recap this episode. This is probably our shortest podcast ever. I think before we started recording, you had said that the ones we hate will be really short. We can only go off on something for so long. So
right.
For timeliness, I gave this a 2. Gays get married all the time. In 2002, it wasn't possible though. So the story isn't exactly timely anymore, since this episode is a little bit of an outdated history lesson. It's a little too much nostalgia to make it really timely.
I also gave it a 2 because, again, marriage equality, it's here and hopefully here to stay. Sometimes you never know with this current administration. So, yeah, there's not much to glean from this in terms of timeliness.
Information accuracy, I gave it a 3, which is my middle of the road average rating, only because there was just no information in the story.
I gave it a 2 based on that stupid lesbian stereotypes that just bug the hell out of me. The way it always grates me, the way these guys continually put down the lesbians. And then the whole, Michael and Ted are trying to buy the gift, and he said, you want to give them something romantic, buy them power tools. They love that shit. I'm like,
it's true.
Ted, go fuck yourself. I'm so angry. Okay. So how about relatability?
I gave it a zero.
Woof.
I am off the scale into negative territory. This was absurdist material. It's never really worked for me. And this episode was just too full of it. New aspects of characters were introduced that never surface again in the entire oeuvre of the show. This is just a throwaway episode. It means nothing. They got married. That's all you need to know. That could have been like an off-camera moment for the way that this show treated it.
I'll give it a one. Mainly because when they finally got to the wedding, it was kind of sweet. And I liked the vows. And I'll leave it at that.
Well.
So that was episode 11 of season 2, The Wedding.
We have one more Karen Walton episode in the series. It's a little bit better. It's not bad. Next week, Debbie takes matters into her own hands to discover the identity of Jane Doe, the dumpster boy. And Michael is upset to learn that Brian fucked the shit out of Dr. Ben Bruckner years ago.
I'd be into that. That's episode 12 of season 2, One Degree of Brian Kinney.
We are still Queer as Folk. Please rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe. It really means a lot to us and helps more people find our show.
Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Dominguez.
And I'm Patrick Randall. We'll see you next week. Still, Queer as Folk was written and performed by Patrick Randall and Matt Dominguez.
New episodes every Wednesday as we take apart the show one episode at a time.
Available now on iTunes,
Google Play,
Stitcher,
TuneIn,
Overcast,
Pocket Cast, and all your other favorite podcatchers.
Still, Queer as Folk is made with love in Chicago.